you've just seen. Darlene was born in Haiti, raised in Quebec. She has an MA in sociology from the University of Montreal, specialized in immigration and ethnic relations, and her studies were done on women and their concerns among ethno-cultural minorities. So, Darlene worked for several years at the INRS, which is the National Research Scientific Institute in Quebec. She was the director and a coordinator of a special research project on the right of migratory seasonal agricultural workers. And she now is the coordinator of Action Travail Femmes. She's been working for over 10 years on the question of systemic discrimination and the problem of equality for women at work. She recently, her group recently had a big victory in Quebec when 7 women complained against Gaz Metropolitan Company with respect to their discriminatory employment services, which were systemic, and we're very proud to be associated with her and the group and all those women who did win against Gaz Metropolitan. She's very determined to fight for equality, and she's on the board of many, many groups, and she defends women's rights in Quebec. So, Darlene, you've got the mic.
Bonjour.
Good morning. What a pleasure it is to be here this morning, and an honor at the same time. However, I must say that I'm a bit small here with these people on the stage. Look at the size of this room with all these people. Look at all the knowledge gathered in this room, the determination in this room. Annick, when she presented me, she forgot something that I think is important. The victory that our group had, Action Travail Femmes, against Gaz Metropolitan, back in September, we went to the Human Rights Tribunal in Quebec and we won. And we must share this victory with CUPE. We must share our victory with CUPE. Now, to get into the theme of the morning, I don't even know if I should be standing in front of you today to talk to you about solidarity, community, solidarity, and unionism. I would, if CUPE had not contributed to our fight against Gaz Metropolitan, I would never have won, and I would never even be here. Thank you very much. Now, I'd like to put you into the context of our group. Action Travail Femmes is what is it? Well, it's an organization that's got 30 years of existence, and our mission is to fight against poverty and exclusion of women in the workplace. Now, this means that we want to improve working conditions and living conditions for women. And what are the means chosen? We help them to accede to good unionized jobs. And you know why? You know pretty much why we want to do that. In my presentation, which is not very long, I would like to talk to you about the history of how this solidarity, this union and community solidarity, was beneficial in the past. Sometimes there were irritants. That happens. And how we can explore together a way of reflecting on this to reconstruct certain bridges which in the past might have been burned. My mandate this morning is how can unions work in collaboration with the communities? I also want me to talk to you about how to have realistic demands and how to have access to good work for women in the public sector. And finally, I should also speak to you about how we can touch the next generation of unionists. I am not, I'm just a layperson. I'm not unionized myself, okay? But I understand very well the effects of unionization on the improvement for women's working conditions and for employment equity. A bit of history now. At the beginning, our group, ATF, what did it do? And what did it want? First, it wanted to find good jobs for women. So for many years, we were trying to work with women who had no training that could lead to good jobs. We wanted to get them into welding, aeronautics, mechanical things. In 1977, several large employers were invited to a round table to hire women as blue-collar workers. CN, the National Railroad, was among the most open employers at this meeting. In 78, we told women to employ for these jobs, like, you know, working locomotive engineers and all kinds of stuff. There were jobs that women hadn't held since the Second World War. The Second World War, the men are on the front, and Rosie the Riveter has to go in and do the work. You never can be too much of a woman. You never have too many kids. No problem with child care, because we needed the women at work, so we took care of everything. Now, women had to have certain knowledge and have medical exams and things like that. So women were hired, but many of them were eliminated for all kinds of reasons. There were tests that we determined were discriminatory. So our group, ATF, said, well, in the future, for welding positions, to work on the trains, you had to have a knowledge of welding. And I said, hey, whoa. 1978, you're going to work on the, as a conductor on a train, you have to know welding? What are you talking about? They just wanted to get rid of women. However, it was very paradoxical, because half of the men hired in 78 at the CN knew nothing about welding, but they were hired. And the company even trained these people once it hired them, but it didn't hire any women. Now, what do we do now with the unions? Well, it wasn't an ideal employer, but he was open to the idea. Okay, so we said, well, this is going to be a union demand. The union, we're going to ask for welding. So women arrive, and we're a bit afraid for our jobs, wrongly. And we had special criteria for these women. Now, in this specific case, we can see that the union did not help the cause of feminism. But things did not stay that way. Because we're talking here about a union that, of course, was mostly masculine, mostly men. A little later, in 79, we made a complaint, and we had to find a remedy. A discriminatory complaint with respect to women being hired at CN, and we said we have to have an access program for employment equity. In September 79, a few months later, from our request, from our demand, we got massive request from the QFL to support us. This was a wonderful action of solidarity by the QFL. At the same time, we're telling women to apply in CN. And CN is still saying, well, you know, we can't hire them because they don't know how to weld. So we couldn't get to any kind of agreement. However, once again, the union worked with us to lobby the Quebec Human Rights Tribunal in order to have women having access to these jobs. So here we are, the QFL, the CSN, all the unions recognize that if we want women to improve their living standards, they got to have good jobs, and that means that they have to have access to employment equity, and solidarity is essential to realize this goal. In 1980, the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal said that we were right, and that they had to, CN had to set up an access to equality program. So this was our first victory. Now, here's my question. Do you believe that it would have been possible to have such a decision by the Human Rights Tribunal in 1980 if the Union Solidarity, which helped us, had not existed? Think about it. Think about it for a couple of seconds.
Possible.
I don't think so. The recent experience with Gaz Métropolitain has shown us that it's only by being united that we are able to make gains for women. Well, things are not always going the way we want. Sometimes we fail, sometimes we succeed. And what I remember from that is that sometimes you have this division amongst unions or among other organizations. And here I'm referring to unions that are made up mostly of men, because I know that there's quite a difference when you're in a workplace where women are represent a minority. So in this new millennium, things will change. But we can look at the consequences of this division that existed between unions and human rights group. So for the women's group and human rights group, they must really support these women that work in mostly masculine workplace. They must also assist racialized women. Let's say you're a woman, you work as a blue-collar worker for the city of Montreal. Let's say you're a welder or a plumber, and your union rep is a man, and you work in a man's workplace. When arises a harassment problem, for instance, well, then there's a special problem. And then when women turn to us, we are helpless because the union is there, and normally the union is there to help them out. But it does occur. And also, we're not always sure how some women would like to go to these jobs because they have higher wages. But then we're stuck as a group that defends the rights of workers. We are stuck. But things are not all negative. The Women's Conditions Committee are more and more present within the women's movement. We can look at what is going on in Quebec. We have all kinds of success that women obtain here because we manage to work jointly, women's group and unions. We worked, amongst other things, on women's equity, and we have a sort of coalition. It's a great cooperation between unions and community groups, and this is essential. But then again, this is launched by women. Women are the ones who start this. Also, the balance between family and work in Quebec. We fought in order to increase minimum wage. All that work and all the success we've obtained, and if we can say that we will eventually get $9 in Quebec, even though this is not exactly what we wanted, all this success comes from this solidarity. But if you say, but it's not as obvious, like, if it comes from us instead of you. The fact that the community group cannot invest this in the unions the same way the unions can invest themselves in the community group. So because of that, sometimes we feel we don't our relationship is not on an equal footing. So this is why sometimes, in some instances, we have to sort of rebuild that relationship. That is the relationship between the community groups and the unions. However, I'd like to point out that since about 2006, the experience of my group, ATF, shows us that the relationship with QP against Gaz Métropolitain has shown us that we are bridging the gap. And I must state that without the participation of QP, in this case, we could have continued to put pressure. And when I talk pressures that were put by ATF, we did not do this only for ourselves, but for women at large. We fought for women because we wanted women to gain access to an equity program so that they would be allowed to do maintenance jobs at Gaz Metro. And because of the assistance of the union, we succeeded. We succeeded, but without your assistance, it would have not been possible. Because we didn't have all the resources, and during the trial, there were all kinds of difficulties. The other union was against ATF, so this is why at one point we ended up with we didn't have a prosecutor anymore, so it meant that we couldn't go any further. So now we're in 2009. So in 2006, it had been 10 years that we had launched all of that, and everything could have just stopped there. Why? Because we could no longer represent ourselves before the tribunal. So it would have been impossible for us to win this case without the assistance of an excellent lawyer. Well, I've been talking about the participation of QP. You might wonder, how did they help us? Well, your lawyer, Annick Desjardins, is the one who got involved in this and assisted ATF. And let me tell you, this was not easy. It's not an easy situation when you're dealing with systemic discrimination. You cannot fight a case like that with a lawyer who's not convinced. No, you need an activist, someone who truly believes in this, someone with expertise. And as you know, in there aren't that many lawyers that specialize in equity and women's equity. I don't know if I'm right, but you can correct me. So when we talk about the union's participation, there's also the CSN union, which represented the employees at Gaz Métro. And we understand they wanted to protect the rights of their unionized members, in this case mostly men, but they didn't really look into the impact of that. So it made me think, how come when women get into a specific workplace, why all of a sudden would the union will sort of side with the employer? And this is what happened back in 1981 with the CN. So in this case, with this other company, history was repeating itself. So how can we ensure that our demands are still present? So it would be good to make our message heard, not only amongst women, but amongst men. Men must be made aware, especially those men that work in non-traditional workplace for women, they need to be informed about all of this. In 2009, we've reached that level where we don't need to stop convincing those of you here that are convinced, but we have to go over the bridge and reach out our hand and make them aware of the situation. And we need to avoid the situations where you have one or a few women in this workplace that need to have all that responsibility upon their shoulders. Because when you're a woman and you work in a non-traditional job, but it could be elsewhere, where you're a minority, whether you are of another culture and you are a minority, you are being ostracized and marginalized. So when a problem occurs, people tend to say, oh, it's not that bad, because the other people do not understand what we're going through. An example, have you ever witnessed a situation where you have two individuals, one will complain about racism and the other one, and most people will go, they don't really understand what racism is all about. And oftentimes, people don't understand what it's all about. So we don't always understand. And I don't think that it's by staying each on our side with our own point of view that this will lead to anything positive. Well, imagine you're a victim, and at the same time, you're the lawyer, because you're the only one who truly knows what you're complaining about and what you are demanding. So, right there on the spot, you are being ostracized. So, then again, we need to work with the various human rights groups. At ATF, we organize some training to professors in non-traditional jobs, and we explained to them what sexual harassment was all about, because when you send women in non-traditional jobs, people who work there need to be made aware of this situation. How to explain all of this to the newcomers in the unions? Well, you know, solidarity, this is the basis. Human rights organizations, let's not forget it, they are a place where people become aware of all kinds of situations. At ATF, we train future activists, future union members. And in that regard, we prepare them, and then it's up to you to take a hold of them. But in order to do that, we need to work closely together in order to reach those objectives. Many women managed to get jobs to ATF. We've assisted many of them to obtain specific jobs. And when they get in the workplace, oftentimes they become union members, union reps, and it does make a difference. Through our mission, our demands, we are sort of a training agent for these future union members. We also should set up links with other women's groups. It's fundamental. Quebec and Canada is, as I like to say, a tutti-frutti country. So this is why we have to take this into account. So there are differences, but we also have common grounds. So this is why we have to focus on our common elements rather than our differences. And if we look at theory, we are starting a new cooperation. And I find this very interesting, but maybe one day we should organize a symposium where we could invite various unions and human rights groups so that we can talk about our common objective in terms of women's job equity. All these participants could discuss and then act in order to improve women's situation. Thank you.